Welcome to Diving Into Writing with me, Lucinda Hebray and Marielle Smith. Join us as we dive beyond the surface of our writing practice. Hi, Marielle.
Hey, Lou.
Here we are yet again. We keep showing up.
Yes. And we're not self-sabotaging the podcast.
No, just our writing.
Just our writing, curious. Which is good.
Or for me is marketing.
Well, that is part of the writing career.
Yeah, it's that aspect that I sabotage quite a lot.
Yeah.
But you put a question out on Facebook, didn't you?
I did, yes. Because we were going to talk, because we've been talking about limiting beliefs and how you can just like uncover them and try to figure out where they come from and then how you can rewrite them into more empowering beliefs. We were going to talk about other ways that we can self-sabotage or get in our own way. So I put the question on my own personal, I have a lot of author friends on Facebook. And I also put the question in my Accountable Wordsmiths group, which is the group people can join if they buy 52 Weeks of Writing. And so I asked basically, I said, like, we're doing an episode on self-sabotage. Tell me how you self-sabotage your writing. And it was fun. So it was sad, but it was fun.
Well, I'm thinking that because you did that, I'm not on the spot.
How do you mean?
So I don't have to tell you about all the ways I self-sabotage because you've got so many other examples.
Well, the thing is that there's definitely things in here that don't resonate with me, right? Because I'm just a different personality type, I think. But there are also things in here that I'm like, oh, I do that too. I'd never thought of that as a self-sabotaging behavior, but it is. Yeah. Oh. So that for me, I was like, ouch. Oh, yeah, I definitely do this. But it was I said it was sad, but it was also fun. I think it was, there were a lot of people then going, yes, this, same. Yeah, me too. So I'm like, at least for them, because there was a lot of people who normally don't respond to my, like, there's people that responded who I didn't know I had as friends on Facebook. So that's how long we haven't been talking to each other. So it kind of triggered something, I guess.
Yeah. So do you have it in order? I'm quite excited to see what you've got on there.
I just wrote them all down. So we can just go through them.
You don't have them in order of favorites or anything?
No, I have them in order that people posted them.
Yeah.
Is that acceptable to you? Do you want me to give them a number?
No, that's acceptable. I'm just curious to know what you've got on there.
Okay. Well, so the first response, and that immediately got, yes, same, me too, oh gosh, I'm not alone, is somebody was talking about the way that they self-sabotage their writing process is by making things extraordinarily complicated and then demanding of oneself that all the details and behind-the-scenes stuff is perfectly squared away before being allowed to begin.
Not me.
Is that sarcasm? Is it really not you?
No, it's really not me. That sounds like it's someone that likes planning.
I like planning, but that's also not me.
Okay.
But I do, it is behavior that I've seen in clients. Absolutely. Yeah, it's absolutely behavior that I've seen. And there's actually one that's connected, I think, to me, not necessarily the extraordinary complicated, but somebody later on posted something about outlining so rigorously. So these are this person who wrote this is a plotter, not a pantser.
Yeah.
So by the time that they finally, you know, sit down to write the story, the actual story needs to be written, the muse is long gone and they don't feel creative anymore. And that sort of like slows them down and makes it hard to sit down. So that for me, so there's this really rigid planning.
Yeah.
Can be very limiting.
Yeah. There's no danger of that with me. No danger.
I think because I am a rigid. Well, the thing is, I'm a planner. I'm not a rigid planner.
Mm.
Like I have the things that I want to get done. But by the end of the week, I don't care when I get what done when.
Yeah.
So it does switch. Like I don't get upset or get in my own way or get paralyzed when on Tuesday, 3 p.m., it says I'm going to do A, but I've decided in the last minute I'm going to do B now, which I was going to do the next day, and I'm just going to put A into like to when, but that's fine for me. Yeah. That's what I use in my planner. I actually use a lot of sticky notes.
Yeah, you like sticky notes.
I like my sticky notes. So I basically cut the sticky notes kind of the size of the time slot I think I need.
Sorry, mother, I can just see it.
It is true. And then I just put it so I can move it around. I don't do that for all, like it's still a mess. Like I do cross things out and stuff like that. But that helps me to be like, this needs to be done, but it really doesn't matter when it gets done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for me, I don't think it would have taken me a year to finish. I finished the book. Finished it. It wouldn't have
you
taken.
Finished a book?
Yes, finished it.
Yay!
And it wouldn't have taken me a year if I would have spent more time planning.
Okay, so it's definitely. So I kind of get the feeling that you and planning can sort of like. You could have a better relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Although. Sometimes I have to write my way into characters.
Yeah. And totally get that.
Yeah. And there was a lot of new characters in this one. So, yeah.
I like it too. Like, I do like my plans, but there needs to be enough space. Because if I do, I did that once with a project, like outlined it very really. That was because I was co-writing. And that at one point I thought now all the fun is gone.
Yeah.
Right. Because but it wasn't because as it turned out, certain scenes, like when it went to beta readers, certain scenes didn't work.
Yeah.
And that's when for me, because I'm like I love the revision process.
Yeah.
That's when I got to be creative because I was going to cut certain scenes and then magically everything still connected because in that moment I allowed the characters to make that bridge.
Yeah.
So that for me was the fun part, but on beforehand. So that was only the first book. I think the second and third book were slightly less outlined because the readers gave me sort of, you know, like, oh, there's no fun to be had anymore here.
Yeah.
So I did that once and I learned my lesson.
I used to do video editing. So, well, used to make like band videos for Marcus, including special effects. We had a green screen and, you know.
Oh, wow.
And what the best thing about it is the same thing about writing that I love, and it's just when things slot together and
mm-hmm.
you're all almost operating on a subconscious level, so you kind of cut your clips up and you're marrying stuff to the music as well, so the action to the music, and then sometimes you get like a row of clips that work, but not in a way that you initially intended or you planned. And that's the same with writing. Well, it is for me.
That's the magic, right?
Yes. And I just love, it's the best thing in the world when things just come together and you might have planned, I don't know, motivation for something, and then you can just see a better path and it all comes together.
Yeah.
And that happens quite a lot for me. So I think that I must be operating on a subconscious level as well.
Well, that's what they say, right? It's like there's complete courses on how to get better at channeling your book. So that's if your book
is channeling.
Channeling, yeah, literally channeling. So just you go into a meditative state and you just receive your book and then you write it. That's cool. You can do courses on that.
Yeah, but that sounds like a con. that sounds like something that everyone would aspire to do. And so easy, there's no struggle involved.
Yeah,
in
but
that.
But it's not easy because it takes a lot of practice to be able to become like a vessel. Right, so it's not easy at all.
Have you tried it?
I do. I was gifted the course, and this is the thing. I got lost in the first week because there's so much homework.
Oh.
I didn't have time for it, so that's why I know it's not easy. Like, it takes consistent practice.
Okay.
It's like meditation and yoga.
Yeah, I love them though.
Yeah. Okay, so the another point, and I think that really connects with the other two, is overthinking a project to the point that you write nothing.
Yeah, again, not a struggle for me, that one.
No, but I do see it. I do see that as well in other people and clients. That it's just, it becomes so overwhelming at that point that you just,
Yes.
So another one, and I'm wondering whether this one resonates with you. Somebody else said, having so many ideas that you end up writing none of them.
No, not really. If I do a lot of, like, in the planning stage, the bit that I hate, I will sit down and write. And then I very rarely read it, but it helps me to understand what I need.
At least understand where you're going.
Yeah.
Like, fully grasp where you at least think. Because for me, for some people who are not real planners, just knowing really well where they have to end up, that's enough for them.
Yeah.
And the rest just comes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't think I have that one either. I have lots of other things, lots of other issues.
And I'm sure we'll come across some of them. I do, like, I do have the many ideas. Right. And they do overwhelm me, but not. It tends me to go faster with other projects so that I can do them all. So it's not that I get paralyzed because I have so many ideas. It's more that I get frustrated that a day is not 48 hours, so I can get more work done.
Yeah.
So for me, it actually motivates me.
Yeah.
Because I want all of these ideas out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I see this one. And I think it's connected to, and I do have that a little bit. It's something I've been struggling with recently, is not necessarily having so many ideas that you end up writing none of them, but more having so many ideas and not knowing which one to go with first.
Yeah, yeah.
That is definitely something that I'm like, what is the smartest thing to do now? And I think what I should be asking myself, what I want to be asking myself, is what do I want to work on right now? Instead of asking, like, what is the, like, marketing-wise, for example, what
is
the most clever step I can take now? I would rather go to, what do I feel like working on right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not there yet, but I'm realizing that it's something I've been doing. Yeah.
Go on then.
So you
Yeah,
okay. So this is I'm pretty sure this one resonates. Not sticking to the plan by changing priorities in the moment. So yes. This goes with, I'd better first do this thing. So the person came with things like, I'd better first check this email, or I'd better first respond to this Facebook post.
Yes, and I have another weird thing of whatever I should be doing, I'm always doing something else. So if I should, if I sit down to write, that's when I'll check my emails, or I'll think, well, I'll just hoover. I'll just do my housework. It's like my brain will suggest anything rather than the tasks that I'm supposed to be doing.
So does this mean that when you should be hoovering your writing?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I think if that is the case, I don't think it's necessarily, it doesn't have to be self-sabotaging.
Well, right? It is, though, because I might set aside 2 hours for writing. I'm only going to set aside 5 minutes
for hoovering. that definitely resonates.
Or for housework.
Okay, yes. Yeah, okay. So in that sense, yeah.
But okay, it's not just that. I actually enjoy doing the thing that I shouldn't be doing at the time when I shouldn't be doing it. So if I'm at work as well, I'd rather write my records up after work and clean my house at work. I don't know what that's about. I don't know.
I think this is a separate individual conversation between the two of us about your childhood, probably. Yeah. Oh gosh, I don't know what to make of that. I don't have that at all. Like, yeah. I don't get guilty pleasure of hoovering when I should be writing and writing when I should be hoovering.
That is it, isn't it? It is.
Yeah. Yeah. But you are, so it's, I feel like it's kind of you against the system.
I think, yes, it could be that. It could be that, because I am a little bit like that. But it's also, there's something about particularly when I sit down to write, there's something about my brain that's like, well, there's this to do and that to do and the other to do, and here's a big long list of things that you should or could be doing, and why don't you just check what so and so said on Facebook?
I do recognize this one, like not in terms of like completely rebelling against my own system like you do, but I do the whole, like, when I started my morning writing routine, I told myself, yeah, when I go to bed, I put my phone, because it's also my alarm, so I turn it on flight mode.
Yeah.
So nothing comes in. Yeah. So the original idea was that I was going to just drag myself out of bed, make a cup of tea, and then just sit behind my computer, and then I can turn on my phone like later on when I'm having breakfast or whatever.
Yeah,
that, of course, that lasted for a few weeks.
And well, now I'm impressed it lasted that long.
That might be overestimating myself. Okay. Actually, like, I can't, it's been a while ago. No, but so from now it's so I do the same. So I always end up starting. I don't start when I want to start. I start like 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Some days are easy. Right. And then it's just, but some days I just do get a little bit lost. And you know what? I do stupid things like pose a question like on Facebook or email somebody.
Yeah.
At the end of my working day. So I'm kind of, and they always say that you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't start up conversations, even if it's like an email into the ether. because unconsciously you are waiting for a reply so you don't wind down.
Yeah.
And this is something that I always do, because then in my head, I'm telling myself that while I'm watching this, while I'm reading this novel and sort of like, you know, sitting on the couch with my cup of tea, I've made the ball roll. Right?
Yeah.
I know it's not good behavior because it keeps you in this state of receptance.
Receptivity.
Yeah.
Even if you have just made an English word up.
Well, the language is very, very versatile and it's always changing. But yes, I do recognize that. But I have the same, for example, if I know I'm hungry and it's time to get lunch, I will say, I'd better answer this email or whatever. And yes. before I know it, like my toasty is burning. And so this is something that like applies to all areas of my life.
Yes. And I cannot multitask.
I've been reading about that, and they say that nobody can multitask. It's more about how well can you switch.
Yeah.
Nobody's brain can focus on multiple things. it's how fast can you switch between one thing and the next?
Not very well, apparently. But I have just bought a book and I can't reach it at the moment. Hold on. It's called Deep Work by Cal Newport. And I'll let you know how that goes, because I'm hoping that that's going to change my life.
Well, I hope so too for you. It sounds great though.
Yeah, I think it's on the principle that you need to set a block of time aside to fully concentrate on one aspect.
Okay, I do believe that, like I'm really bad at that, but I do believe that it can be very beneficial.
It's quite a thick book though, so I'm hoping for more than that out of it.
You have to block lots of chunks of time to dive into that, to dive deep into that.
Yeah,
but do let me know, because that does sound great. Okay, so then I have rereading and then editing what's already been written 100 times over.
Yeah.
And there's like multiple people said, yes, this, thank you, same. I do the same thing. Somebody even said that they even have that tendency, like they use Scrivener to understand which of the books have already been published, because they have a tendency to even want to rewrite the ones that are already out there.
Yeah.
So she has to keep reminding herself, sorry, love, this book is already done. I don't have to work on that anymore.
I don't do that. I kind of feel... Unlike you, who...
Oh, gosh.
No, it's not a bad thing, but you've got a book that you've been working on for quite a while, and it's one that I think you started when you were 6 and you're still working on it.
14, but thank you.
Okay, 14. So,
and I still haven't figured the bloody thing out. I'm still doing research. I've never built those foundations, because this was before I was a plotter. So I've always half-heartedly figured out my world and stuff. And now I'm consistently, like, as I'm rewriting, I run into things. I'm like, fuck, I still don't know how this works.
I think we could do an entire episode on this.
On my failure to finish my book.
Yes.
It is actually so... You know, just a side note, I was talking to Bethany, so the co-host of my other podcast, about this, and she acknowledged, because my world, it's a fantasy book, right, but it's a world that has to match our own world. So it's a fantasy world inside our current world. So it actually, all the events that I make up have to match actual historic events and how people migrated and stuff like that. So
I do feel that you're making excuses.
That's okay.
Or about to make excuses.
No, but it was just because I never thought about it like that, right? Because I was actually really frustrated with myself, like, why can I just not figure out this world? And then she said, well, you are creating a fantasy world within an existing world. So I cannot just make up a history. I have to make up a history and then make sure it fits actual history.
Yeah. Or write something else.
No.
Exactly.
This is it. This is the story I need to write.
Yeah. But you know, when you've written that story and you put it out there, it's going to be very precious to you.
It will be. I know that.
So, but for me, I write and then it's out there and I'm thinking about the next one.
Yeah, I do have books that do, and I do have projects that work the same. It's this very particular series that just have that really intense, I kind of feel like this is like, if this is the only thing I ever write or put out there, then I've done my job. That's kind of, I want to, like, there's millions, not millions, but dozens of other stories that I want to write, and I hope that I'll get to write them. But this is that one story that I'm like, if I can tell this story, then I'm done. I have done my thing.
Like I say, we need to do an entire episode on it.
Oh gosh, we will. Okay, so next point is, and this was very particular to this person, allowing myself to be distracted by shiny things. So this particular person has like so much craft supplies and like washi tapes, and it's all glitter, right? So I completely get that she used the word shiny.
Yeah.
But it's basically, for me, it's like allowing yourself to be distracted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By Amazon.
It's I have somebody here mentioned Netflix. But we both don't have a TV, so that's, I think, already a win for us.
Yeah.
Although I do watch Netflix, and I currently also have Disney Plus, because I finally found a VPN that works for me. But also, so somebody also said endless social media scrolling. And somebody else said, and she was talking about a very specific gadget that I do not know. So, but summing it up, it was, her problem was, or she called it the bane of her existence, is that she has too many gadgets and stuff that are distracting near her writing area, because that is simply the best way for them. Like, that's like, that makes most sense for them to be like charged there or whatever, right? In that specific area. So she said, I sit down and then I grab my switch. I don't know what a switch is.
No.
So yeah, but I get that. It's like, if you sit down to write, but you still have your phone on your desk, you keep flipping it over to see if somebody texted you.
Right? Yeah, like, you need to, well, you don't need to do anything.
You don't need to do anything, but if you recognize that you keep checking your phone and you don't want to do that, you might want to leave your phone in the other room.
Mm.
Yeah. Or turn off your, if that's a possibility. Not everybody has the luxury that nobody's relying on them, so they can turn off their signal. I can do that. Yeah, but any distractions, right? And I think everybody has their own bane.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like endless social media scrolling is definitely one for me.
I sometimes go, oh, I need to put that on my shopping list, or I need to go on Amazon right now and order whatever.
Some, it can be pens. Like, for me, it was like, okay, so I'm editing a project right now, an academic project. It's going to be a book and it's all about digital platforms. So that can be anything, right? But this particular chapter that I worked on today was about the food delivery platforms. So at one point, I was just, I kept checking like the apps that we have in Cyprus. Like, are there any new restaurants? Am I cooking tonight? So I was doing work. And I do, so just, you know, for those who are listening, I'm very strict with my time. So if I get distracted, I immediately stop my timer. So I will not unnecessarily scroll through restaurants in the neighborhood that deliver to my house on a client's time.
Yeah.
But that is why when I look at my day, you can see that I have like a dozen times that I clicked timing on this particular project, because I stopped so often to check this thing. And it's just because I was, you know, reading on food. Yeah, it was bad.
So if you didn't burn your toast and not do your lunch, you'd be all right.
Exactly. But I did not burn my toast today. I think we all have that. We all have something like this, right?
Well, I think we should only talk about one more. We could do another episode on it. But
there's so many.
It'll be too long, Els.
Okay. Oh, there's too many. I've ticked them off, actually, as we went through them.
Give us a good one, then.
I'm looking. Okay, this one, I think this one we've already mentioned. So one person, I thought that was really interesting, and I wonder to what extent it will resonate with people. Somebody was talking about, so I've already mentioned sort of like the paralysis that you get, right, when things are overwhelming, but somebody very particular said that how she self-sabotages is by doing like all the research on how to publish. So am I going self-publishing? Am I going traditional? If I go traditional, do I want an agent? Do I need an agent? Who would be a great agent? So doing all of that before having a book.
Yes.
And that for me, I was writing stuff and I was working on my book before I didn't even know that indie publishing was a thing. So I wasn't there. Like, I was just writing, right? So she called that analysis paralysis, right? So you get so caught up in all the things that could be part of the writing journey that you're already sort of stuck in decisions that you have to make then. Well, you don't have a fucking book.
Yeah, but that's not my problem either. My problem's the opposite. I've got books, but I'm not marketing them.
Yeah.
Because I'm just focused on writing more books.
Yeah. So you too would probably, if you would just get together and just sort of like give each other half.
We'd be fine.
You'll be like a complete entrepreneur, basically, right? Yeah. Yeah. But I did think it was a really good one. Because I do actually, I do see these posts a lot on Facebook in you know, those writing groups that we're both, I think we're both part of most of them anyway, that there are people who've never written a book.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are already like, I believe that for some people, buying the cover before you write a book can speed up the process because you have sort of like a focal point, you have something you can focus on. Writing the blurb before you write the book can also be really great because then you make sure that you hit the tropes.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't think any of that information is valid if you're really new to the writing process. That is really good stuff if you have a couple of books under your belt.
Yes. But I've been to various, like, local, before COVID, local events, and it amazes me the number of times that people ask, well, how do I get an agent, or how do I, and you're like, you've just done an introduction period where they've told you that they've not written a book, and they've maybe outlined a book, or they know what book they want to write, but the one question they're asking the expert at the front of the room is, how do I get an agent? And I'm just like, what?
I'm more of the first figure out if you can actually write a novel from A to Z, then figure out if you can actually write.
And if
I do think everybody is able to write a novel.
Yeah. Not everybody. Maybe.
But this is the thing. I like if you read all the craft books and you apply them and everything, I think there will be something. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's good or whatever. Like that is. Yeah. But I think everybody can tell a story.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's a good story. It doesn't mean it's written well, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So I'm like, why worry about these things? So what I did, so this is a question that came up in my Accountable Wordsmiths, or another question. This was a behavior that somebody answered, or gave us an answer in my Accountable Wordsmiths group. And I asked, I haven't checked whether I got a response, but because my initial reaction was, what about the writing scares you? That you focus on the moment when you're done writing.
Yeah.
Because for me, and this is definitely true for you, since that's all you want to focus on, the writing is the happy place.
Yeah, it's true.
So if you're too caught up in what happens after you're already done, instead of actually writing the thing,
yeah,
then why, what keeps you from writing the thing?
Yeah.
Because there must be a reason why your ego focusing on something so far ahead, so you don't have to actually do the work.
So with the people that I'm talking about that I've met, mm-hmm. I kind of feel that they want it done. So they're not interested in doing the work or doing the learning. They're interested in being famous, I suppose. You know, it's like, you know, you get people that want to be celebrities without having talent. So the people that go on to Big Brother reality TV shows, they want to be famous. Or some of them want to be famous, but without having any talent or doing any, you know.
It's like a shortcut. Like,
yeah, yeah. Well, that's what.
What are you leaving behind?
Yeah. So they want. Well, you'll have seen it in 20 to 50 books as well. They want to be rich.
Yeah. And they forget that.
Yeah.
I mean, the people who are in there, who are rich, they have
all the work in.
They have worked so hard. And yes, we can learn, right? We can learn from how they did it.
Yeah.
But first of all, like, it's not one size fits all.
No.
So you do have to learn some things for yourself.
Yeah,
and figure out what works for your particular life, books you write, etc., and what you want, because everybody has different goals as well.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean. It's that they want to be done.
Yeah.
They want the novel.
Yes.
They want it out. They want it, and I'm like, But that's not how it goes, because you're the one who has to put word after word after word until there is an organ.
Yeah. You have to sweat blood and tears to get your product, to get your novel out there.
Yes.
And I don't care who you are. There is a process that you go through. But if you've got an expert at the front of the room that's an expert on writing, I'm talking about a specific event, which was in Nottingham, and me and Anna, who used to do the podcast before you, went to like this open day that they had to see what they did, and they run courses. So there were only a handful of us, but they kind of got you to introduce yourself and have a chat with other people. And no one there on that particular day had written a novel.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And so this guy did a presentation about what you could get for membership of this writing place, and how it was a great place for bringing people together and what have you, which it was. And then when they asked for questions, the questions were all, how do I get an agent and how do I publish? Yeah. And it not just, and I'm like looking around thinking, well, write a book. Shouldn't be saying write a book first.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. Yeah.
I just looked it up because this reminds me of, Anne Lamott talks about this in Bird by Bird. Her book. I don't know if you've read it.
No, I've not read that.
Okay. So she says, and it's in 52 Weeks of Writing too. So that's why it was very easy for me to just look it up. So she talks about that, right? That because she teaches, basically the book is, she has a lot of stuff that she teaches in her writing classes, her creative writing classes. So she says, but I still encourage anyone who feels at all compelled to write to do so. I just try to warn people who hope to get published that publication is not all that it is cracked up to be. But writing is. Writing has so much to give, so much to teach, so many surprises. The thing you had to force yourself to do, the actual act of writing, turns out to be the best part.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, but so she does talk about that in her book as well, is that so many people are focused on the getting published part when they, first of all, should. So for me, my initial reaction is, well, don't you first want to know if you can write a book? That's my first. Because for the longest time, the way I self-sabotaged myself is by thinking I couldn't write a book, so I didn't take it seriously. So I didn't spend enough time on it, or didn't carve out time for it, until somebody actually read what I had written. I was like, you need to finish this thing because you can write. Like, so not knowing whether I could write or not, that kept me stuck for a long time. So I would be like, first figure out if you can write.
Yeah.
And so the funny thing is, I also know people who are interested in the question, like, yes, like, how do I get an agent and stuff? And how do I self-publish? But then they admit they've never, ever let anyone read any of their work.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Yes, and I know that is very scary.
Yeah.
And you know why it is very scary? Because we're all afraid. I think we are, well, not everybody, because there are some very confident people out there. But I think most of us are really scared. This is why a lot of us have imposter syndrome. We're really scared that somebody's going to come in and say, don't bother, don't quit your day job.
Yeah.
This is not happening.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't ask yourself these questions before you know, first of all, whether you can write, whether you can hit a nerve when somebody reads your work.
But the other thing
then
is, it's a process, isn't it? So what you write start with is rubbish, unless you're like gifted.
I think we know that is because I am still trying to fight my way out of a book that I started 20 years ago. Because, yeah, most of it is rubbish.
Yeah. But because we do write rubbish to start with, and that's okay. And it doesn't mean that you can't write. It just means that you have to develop the skill.
And it also doesn't mean that you cannot publish, because, of course, perfectionism is another.
Yeah.
Right. And this is why this person mentioned rereading and then editing was already been written 100 times over. Perfectionism is also self-sabotage. So nobody says that you have to become perfect at the craft before you publish a book. Yeah. But it's like a scale.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a point in time when you are not writing well enough to publish yet.
Yeah.
And that is years and years and years. I don't think anybody ever masters the craft.
Not totally, no.
No. I think we'll always learn something or read something that just blows our mind, and then we can apply that.
Yeah. Even Stephen King.
Yeah, I think the easiest way we can see that prove is that he still has books that tank.
Yeah, well, some of his books aren't as good as others. And says someone that I've got his latest on my bedside here, but I've not started it, so I can't tell you what it's like.
What's the title?
It's Billy Summers.
Because I don't know if this is the previous one or not, because I know somebody who's very much into one of the later books. So I didn't know whether it was the last one or... So that intrigued me. Yeah. But this is the thing, right? Like even for... Like, you would think that Stephen King by now knows how it goes.
Yeah.
And but then he... Yeah.
I think with Stephen King and... maybe a lot of famous authors, they get to a stage where they're too famous for editors to properly tell them what they need to do. Or they overrule them.
I'm not sure if it's over. I think if you overrule them, that's your ego talking.
Yeah.
Because you're too important to learn anything. But I do remember J.K. Rowling saying about the fifth Harry Potter book, that because she was already making millions at the time, that she in hindsight wished the editors were harsher.
Yeah, that's
because
what
she
I mean.
Feels that she, yeah, because she feels that she got away with things. That she said, I was really happy in the moment as I was writing it because it meant I was done. Right. But now, like looking back, maybe not now, I don't know, because I try not to listen to anything she says right now because it's. But when she said that, she was like, when I look back on that book, I'm like, I wish now that they'd pushed me because it would have been a better book.
It's like they get worse editors as they get more famous.
I do think ego is really important here. So I do think, and I think there's also the assumption by editors. I have that. Like I sometimes get a client and then there's like this list of publications. And then I sometimes see myself pausing, like, am I flagging this? Like, this sounds really weird. Am I flagging this? Or am I going to trust that they know what they're saying or that they've done this on purpose for whatever reason?
Yeah.
Right. And then I have to tell myself, no, just pretend they're nobody and just flag it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do it too, because you kind of assume somebody has an ego because they are some hotshot, whatever. Right. Yeah. So I see that too in my own work.
We're getting off topic now and we need to wrap it up. So. The question has got to be...
How do you self-sabotage your writing?
Yeah.
Or your writing career?
Yeah.
Because you, Lou, do not self-sabotage your writing, but you're definitely sabotaging your writing career.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah.
And at some point, I'm going to have to address that.
Yes. The question is, when...
And to the next book.
That is the worst answer, but I'm taking it for now.
Okay then.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit our website at divingintowriting.com. We'd love to hear from you, and if you'd like to leave us a review, we'd be ever so grateful. Bye for now.